Hey guys, this is Vyom Joshi with Superior North. Welcome back to my channel. Today we will be going over one of the stocks that I found interesting while going through the Japan Company Handbook. And the stock is called JXTJ Holdings, also known as ENEOS. ENEOS is one of the Japan's top refiners and wholesalers, and it's important that we review the company profile, look at the key ratios, perform a DCF discounted free cash flow analysis, and do an expected rate of return calculation to better understand the security. So let's dive in and review ENEOS.
Hey guys, in order to get a better idea of ENEOS's operating segments, let's start off by looking at its annual report. On page 23, the company goes over its four operating segments. The first one is energy, where the company states that petroleum refining and marketing, lubricants, basic chemical products, specialty and performance chemical products, gas, coal, electricity, and new energy comprises this segment. The second operating segment is oil and natural gas E&P. The company states that oil and natural gas exploration, development, and production comprises this segment. The third operating segment is its metal segment, where ENEOS says that this segment comprises of non-ferrous metal resources, development, and mining, copper, gold, silver, sulfuric acid, copper foils, and so forth. And the last operating segment is others, which is a lump of other activities such as asphalt paving, civil engineering works, construction works, and so forth. Now let's look at the revenue breakdown to get a better idea of how much money does each segment bring in. We can see that the energy segment brings in about 84% of the total revenue. Oil and natural gas exploration and production brings in about 1%. Metals brings in 10%. The other segments bring in 5%. We can see that the energy segment is clearly the segment that brings in the lion's share of the revenue. Now let's look at how the sales numbers are broken down per different geographic regions. Over here, we can see that for the energy segment, 81% of the sales comes from Japan. For the oil and natural gas exploration and production, about 10% comes from Japan. For the metal segment, 60% of the sales comes from Japan. For the others, 96% of it comes from Japan. And when we look at the total sales, 79% of the total sales comes from Japan. This means that 21% of the total sales happens overseas, that is outside of the country. And lastly, let's take a quick look at different subsidiaries that ENEOS has. Over here, we can see the four operating segments and the subsidiaries that company has within each segment. Hey guys, now let's look at the key ratios for ENEOS. I'm on Morningstar, looking at ENEOS Holding Inc. Under key ratios, looking at the financials, the first item on the list is the revenue. The revenue is the top line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that the company makes from its sales. All the numbers here that we'll see are going to be in Japanese yen. We can see that back in 2011, the revenue was about 9.6 trillion yen. And for the year 2020, it was about 10 trillion yen. For the trailing 12 months, the revenue is 8.3 trillion yen. We can see that over the past 10 years, the revenue has fluctuated somewhere between 7 and 11 trillion yen. After that, looking at the operating income gives an idea of the amount of money that's left once we subtract the cost of goods sold and the operating expenses from the revenue. We can see that back in 2011, the operating income was about 334 billion yen. And for the year 2020, it was about negative 129 billion yen. For the trailing 12 months, it's a negative number as well. If we look at the past 10 years of operating income, we can see that there were a couple of years in the past, back in 2015 and 2016, when the operating income was negative. This trend goes to show the cyclicality that's inherent with an energy company. Next, looking at the net income is the amount of money that's left with the company once it has paid for all the expenses, costs, interest, taxes, and so forth. We can see that back in 2011, the net income was about 311 billion yen. For the year 2020 and for the trailing 12 months, the income has been negative. We can see that both the operating income and the net income follow the same trend. In other words, when the operating income is increasing, the net income is increasing. And when the operating income declines, the net income declines. And such a trend is a good sign because we do not want to see a company that is selling off its assets from its non-operational income. In other words, it's selling off its discontinued assets in order to generate enough income so that its net income turns out to be positive. We want to see the same effect that the company is facing on its operating income to show up on its net income numbers. After that, looking at the dividends, this is the amount of money that the company pays off to its shareholders annually. We can see that back in 2011, the dividend was about 8 yen per share. And for the year 2020, it's about 22 yen per share. We can see that over the past 10 years, ENEOS has hiked its dividends a few times. As shareholders, we want to see companies that are hiking its dividends and are consistent with their dividend payouts. Next, looking at the shares outstanding, we can see that back in 2011, ENEOS had about 2,487 million shares outstanding. And for the year 2020, it was about 3,248 million shares outstanding. For the trailing 12 months, that number was 3,218 million shares. We can see that the shares outstanding have been declining from its high in 2018, when it was 3,418 million shares. This goes to show that ENEOS for the past few years has been buying back its shares, which is certainly a good sign for existing shareholders, since when a company buys back its shares, it actually helps increase the existing shareholders' ownership within the company. After that, looking at the book value per share, the way Morningstar derives its book value is it subtracts the total liabilities from the company's total assets. We can see that back in 2013, ENEOS's book value was about $7.65 per share, and for the year 2020, it was about $7.72 per share. Finally, looking at the free cash flow, the free cash flow is what we get when we subtract capital spending from the company's operating cash flow. We can see that back in 2011, the free cash flow was about 57 billion yen. And for the year 2020, it was about 250 billion yen. We can see that over the past 10 years, there have only been 2 years when the free cash flow has been negative, which was in 2013 and 2014, primarily because the capital spending exceeded the company's operating cash flow. I will be using the past 10 years of free cash flows for my expected rate of return calculation, and I will be using the 2020 figure of 250 billion yen for my discounted free cash flow DCF analysis. Now let's look at the profitability of the company, focusing on the net margin. The net margin is the ratio of the company's bottom line to its top line, so it's comparing the net income to the revenue. We can see that back in 2011, the net margin was 3.24%, and for the year 2020, we have a negative net margin primarily because the income was negative. Back in 2019, the net margin was 2.9%. What this means is every $100 that ENEOS made in sales in 2019, by the time it paid for all the costs, expenses, interest, and taxes, it only had about $2.9 left as pure profit. When we look at the past 10-year trend, we can see that the net margin has always been in the low single digits. Next, looking at the return on equity. The return on equity is the ratio of the company's net income to its shareholders' equity. Warren Buffett prefers to only invest in companies that have a return on equity of 8% or greater every year for the past 10 years. We can see that back in 2011, ENEOS had a return on equity of about 28%. And for the year 2020, it was negative because the net income was negative. We can see that back in 2019, when the net income was positive, the return on equity was about 12%. We can see that over the past 10 years, whenever the income was positive, the return on equity has mostly been greater than 8%. Next, looking at the return on invested capital, this number gives us an idea of how good the management is at investing the capital and getting a return on that investment. We can see that back in 2011, the return on invested capital was about 13%. It was negative in 2020 because the net income was negative. Back in 2019, the return on invested capital was about 7%. Finally, looking at the interest coverage, this number gives us an idea of how many times can the company pay off its interest obligations using its annual income. We can see that the interest coverage back in 2011 was about 16 times, and for the year 2019, it was about 15 times. Benjamin Graham, the father of value investing, preferred to only invest in securities that had an interest coverage of 5 times or higher. Now let's look at the financial health of the company, focusing on the liquidity measures. The first item on the list is the current ratio. The current ratio compares the company's current assets to its current liabilities. Ideally, we want to see the current ratio to be at least a 1.0 or higher. We can see that back in 2011, the current ratio was at 1.08. For the year 2020, it was at 1.06. And for the latest quarter, it's at 1.09. After that, looking at the quick ratio, the quick ratio is similar to the current ratio. However, we disregard the inventory component. In other words, quick ratio is equal to current assets minus inventory divided by current liabilities. Similar to the current ratio, we prefer to have the quick ratio greater than 1x. And what a quick ratio greater than 1x means is the company would not be dependent on selling its inventory in order to stay liquid. We can see that back in 2011, the quick ratio was at 0.46. For the year 2020, it's at 0.55. We can see that over the past 10 years, the quick ratio has been fairly consistent. Next, looking at the financial leverage. Back in 2011, the financial leverage was at 3.84. And for the year 2020, it's at 3.47. We can see that over the past 10 years, the financial leverage has stayed fairly consistent. Lastly, looking at the debt to equity ratio. This number compares the company's debt to its shareholders' equity. Ideally, we want to see the debt-to-equity ratio to be less than 1. Back in 2011, the debt-to-equity ratio was at 0.71. And for the year 2020, it was at 0.79. Now let's look at the efficiency ratios. The first item on the list is day sales outstanding. This number gives us an idea of how many days go by from the day the company recognizes its sales to the day it actually receives cash. We can see that back in 2011, the day sales outstanding was at 27 days. And for the year 2020, it was at about 43 days. What this means is, in 2020, it took the company 43 days from the day it recognized its sales to the day it actually got cash in hand. Next, looking at the day's inventory, this number gives an idea of how many days does Enneos' product sit in the inventory before it's sold. We can see that back in 2011, the day's inventory was at about 40 days, and for the year 2020, it's at about 55 days. When we look at the past 10 years from 2011 through 2020, we can see that the day's inventory has stayed fairly consistent. Next, looking at the payables period, this number gives an idea of how many days does Enneos take to pay its suppliers. We can see that back in 2011, it took Enneos 33 days to pay its suppliers. And in 2020, it took the company 63 days to pay its suppliers. We can see that the payables period has stayed fairly consistent from 2018 through 2020. Finally, looking at the inventory turnover, this number gives us an idea of how many times does Enneos' inventory go through its system in a calendar year. We can see that back in 2011, it was at 9.13 times. In 2012, it was at 6.12 times. For the year 2020, it was at 6.67 times. We can see that the inventory turnover has stayed fairly consistent from 2012 through 2020. Now let's look at the current valuation of the company. Over here, we will be comparing Enneos to the S&P 500. The S&P 500 is the aggregate of the top 500 companies within the United States. The first item on the list is the price to earnings ratio. We can see that Enneos doesn't have a meaningful PE ratio because its earnings were negative. However, its 5-year average PE is at 8.5, whereas S&P 500 is at 27.2 right now. Next is the price to book ratio. Enneos is at 0.5, whereas S&P 500 is at 3.8. After that, looking at the price to sales, Enneos is at 0.1, whereas S&P 500 is at 2.7. Next, price to cash flow. Enneos is at 1.9, whereas S&P 500 is at 15.8. And lastly, the dividend yield. Enneos' dividend yield is 5.8%, whereas S&P 500's yield is 1.7%. So we can see that other than the current PE ratio, all the other valuation metrics point out that Enneos is undervalued when compared to the S&P 500. Hey guys, now let's look at the discounted free cash flow DCF analysis for Enneos. Over here, I pasted the 2019 free cash flow number that I got from Morningstar, which was actually the 249 billion yen figure that we had. I divided that number by 104 because the current exchange rate states that $1 is equal to 104 Japanese yen. So when we take this exchange rate into account, we get the free cash flow to be about $2,403 million. I'm assuming the annual growth rate of free cash flow to be 3%. This means that I'm assuming that Enneos' free cash flow will grow at 3% every year for the next 10 years. I'm using a discount rate of 10%. This means that I expect this investment to yield me a return of 10%. I'm using the long-term growth rate to be 1%. What this means is after the 10-year mark into perpetuity, I expect Enneos to grow at 1% every year. Next, looking at the shares outstanding, we have 2,318 million shares outstanding, and the long-term debt is $13,328 million. After taking all of these inputs into account, we get the intrinsic value to be about $7.24 per share. When we compare this to the current stock price of about $3.58 per share, we can see that the current stock is trading at a discount of about 50% to its intrinsic value. The way we derive this intrinsic value is we look at what the free cash flows would be every year for the next 10 years. We sum up all those free cash flows. Then we look at what the free cash flows would be from the 10-year mark into perpetuity and sum up all those free cash flows to get the intrinsic value to be about $30 billion. Finally, we subtract the long-term debt from this number and divide by the shares outstanding to get the intrinsic value per share to be about $7.24. Now, if we disregard the perpetuity component, in other words, if we think that Enneos will only grow for the next 10 years and then stop growing, then the intrinsic value comes out to about $1.6 per share. The way I calculated this is I looked at what the free cash flows would be every year for the next 10 years. I summed up all those free cash flows. I subtracted the long-term debt from that number and divided by the shares outstanding to get the intrinsic value without the perpetuity component to be $1.60 per share. Hey guys, now let's look at the expected rate of return calculation for Enneos. Over here, I pasted the past 10 years of free cash flows that I got from Morningstar. I divided the numbers that I got from Morningstar by 104, since the currency exchange rate is $1 equaling to 104 Japanese yen. So all the numbers that we see here are going to be in US dollars. This is the yearly free cash flow trend that we get. We can clearly see the cyclicality in the business, which is inherent with any energy company. We can see that the free cash flow has been positive ever since 2013. Next, looking at the future data and predictions, I'm assuming that there's a 15% likelihood that Enios's free cash flow will grow at 3%. There's a 15% likelihood that its free cash flow will grow at 2%, and a 35% likelihood that its free cash flow will decline at 15%. These are the potential free cash flow rates that we get into the future. After that, taking into account the numbers of shares outstanding, which is 3,218 million shares, at the current stock price of about $3.58 per share, we can expect to get a return of about 15.5% on this investment. In other words, if we were to purchase a share of Enios at the current stock price of about $3.58 per share, we can expect to get a return of about 15.5%. Hey guys, now let's sum it all up. We saw that Enios' revenue for the past 10 years has stayed fairly consistent. The operating income and the net income did see a few negative years. The dividend payouts have been fairly consistent and increasing over the past 10 years. The return on equity has been greater than 8% for the most part whenever the net income was positive. The interest coverage for the year 2019 was greater than 5 times. When we looked at the liquidity ratios, we saw that the current as well as the quick ratio have been consistent for the past 10 years. Similarly, the financial leverage as well as the debt to equity ratio have been steady for the past 10 years, and those ratios are comparable to its competitors. When we looked at the efficiency ratios, we found a similar trend where ever since 2012, the company's efficiency has stayed steady. Next, when we compared Enios' valuations to that of the S&P 500, we found that Enios, for the most part, is undervalued when compared to the S&P 500. After that, when we performed the discounted free cash flow DCF analysis, we found that the intrinsic value comes out to about $7.24 per share, which means that the current stock is about 50% lower than the intrinsic value. After that, when we did the expected rate of return calculation, we found out that if we were to invest in Enios at the current stock price of about $3.58 per share, we can expect to get a return of about 15.5% on this investment. After reviewing all the fundamentals, we can see that Enios is an undervalued security. However, the only downside is that this is an illiquid stock. This means that if you get into this trade, it may take you longer to get out since there may not be a buyer on the other end. However, as a value investor, I do not care about the fact that this is an illiquid security. The fact I care about is that this is a productive asset, it is generating money, and has a duopoly over the Japanese energy market. And last but not least, I find the security to have the margin of safety that I seek with any investment. Hey guys, that is all I have for you this week. Hopefully you found this video on Enios interesting. If you do like this content, please do like, share, comment, and subscribe to my channel. If you have any suggestions as to which stock I should review next, please leave it in the comment section below. I will greatly appreciate it. Thank you.